You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, May 19th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is a four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Digby Parton. On the GOP's Scientology strategy. Among other topics relevant to us today. Also on the program, becoming clear on what role Chuck Schumer played in allowing Fast Track Authority to make its way through the Senate. Also an example from years ago, how NAFTA force Canada to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to pass its own laws, essentially. President Obama bans military hardware for police. Bill O'Reilly says it's 100% untrue that he physically abused his wife, or now ex-wife. 100%. ISIS takes Ramadi in Iraq. White on white crime in Waco. Leaving almost 20 people dead. And a filmmaker claims that Jay-Z and Beyonce bailed out protesters in Ferguson and Baltimore. And the clown car just keeps getting, well, I guess the idea of a clown car is it stays the same size, but it's getting more and more crowded. Lindsey Graham announces that he will announce that he's running for president within days. All that and more on today's program. I was on Hayes' program last night, Chris Hayes' All In, talking about the very real dilemma. And I want to talk to Digby about it, too. I think that it's possible by the time the Republicans have their first debate that they have close to 20 candidates. People are saying it's going to be around 15 or 16, but I'm starting to think that everybody is going to jump in. George Pataki, I think I mentioned last week, is going to jump in. I get some audio to play a little flashback Tuesday about my run-in with George Pataki. But I actually think we have a situation where it's like the California recall, where the more people get in, the greater incentive it is for more people to get in. Because you're a player if you can poll at like 6% in this field. I mean, literally. And when you lose, you're just one of literally a dozen people who lost, as opposed to like the loser. But we will get to why Lindsey Graham is jumping into the race. And folks, this is going to be devastating. I mean, this is, the whole world's on fire and only Lindsey Graham can see it. It's a big deal. Just want to remind you that this program relies on its members for 98% of its funding. However, this month, we are being sponsored by Credo Mobile. Credo Mobile is America's only progressive phone company. We have done sponsorships with them in the past. The reason why I do it with Credo Mobile is because I love what Credo Action does. Credo Mobile funds Credo Action. We've had Becky Bonner in the past on this program multiple times because of actions that they are pursuing. And hopefully we'll have her on in the next couple of weeks to talk about Credo Mobile and what Credo is up to. But Credo Mobile is giving Majority Report listeners a great deal, $100 off of any phone, plus 25% off your data plan fees for 1 year. On top of that, if you are facing early termination fees from your current provider, they will give you up to a $350 credit to get out of those early termination fees on your Credo bill. They'll also give you up to $300 trade-in credit for your current phone. And you can find out how much your phone's worth at credomobile.com/trade-in. But go to credomobile.com/majority report to get this deal. You can call in too at 800-966-1665 and use the coupon code 501882. All of this is on the website. You can click on support our sponsors. We have the details there. But hopefully you know that Credo Mobile supports both Credo Action, which lobbies for progressive positions that I imagine most of you support, that certainly we talk about on this program quite a bit, whether it's against the TPP, whether it's against things like the grand bargain or for expansion of Social Security, against Keystone XL. The Credo is just involved in all of it. And they are out there. They're part of the vanguard. They're working on the debt-free college thing. It's we will hopefully talk to Becky Bond. But you get no early termination fee for your first 30 days, so you can try it out, see if you like it. And this is also a company that donates directly to progressive causes. They've raised $78 million since 1985 for progressive nonprofit groups like the ACLU, like the Sierra Club, the Union of Concerned Scientists. They've given over more than $2 million in donations to Planned Parenthood over the past couple of years. So check it out, credomobile.com/majority report. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the inimitable Digby. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to this program proprietor of the Uber blog Hullabaloo at Digby's blog. Is it Digby's blog dot blogspot.com or am I dating myself?
Yeah, that's right. I'm dating myself.
And also contributor to salon.com, Heather Digby Aparton. Hello, Digby.
Hi, how are you, Sam?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
You know, you wrote about this Charles Murray strategy in Salon, and I've seen no one really talk about this. And it's really disturbing. And to a certain extent, there's been a little bit of a hint of it in the implementation of Dodd-Frank. It seems like there's been a little bit of a hint of it in terms of the way that the Federal Elections Commission, or I guess the IRS, was inundated with applications for 501(c) or 4C applications. But this really, really scares me. Tell us, you wrote about the GOP Scientology strategy. What is it? Where does it come from?
Well, I mean, I think it goes back, just briefly, what it is it is attacking the regulatory state, essentially. I mean, they seem to have come to the conclusion that democracy just isn't really working for them. They can't convince anyone that their agenda, they can't convince enough people that their agenda is the right one. So they are now sort of retreating into kind of, end-run strategies to achieve their goals. And needless to say, I mean, the two things that all the entire conservative coalition, which includes libertarians in this case, can agree on is that, you know, taxes are bad and regulations are even more bad, and particularly federal regulations. I mean, this is, you know, this is where Cliven Bundy becomes the poster boy for the conservative movement. This is how it works. So they're finding that this is really tough for them because most regulations, federal regulations in particular, I mean, they may have, you know, beefs with local regulations that have nothing to do with this, which are the kind of things that most people actually deal with as citizens are local regulations. But federal regulations are the big boogeyman. And they have decided that this is also a useful organizing strategy for the right. So Charles Murray, who is well known as a racist polemicist for having written The Bell Curve, although I understand he's written some things in the distant past that were not quite as inflammatory as that book, but that's what he's known for. And
he is successful, probably
yes. So, you know, he has now, he's got a new book now. It's called By the People, and it is, which is kind of it's an oxymoron, but that would be fitting, in which he is telling people, in which he is explaining that what they need, and this is my favorite part of it, is that they need a couple of billionaires to finance some kind of a think tank institution, legal institution, that would file flurries of lawsuits against the regulatory system of the federal government. And this presumably would be everything from the environment to health regulations to any other, you know, kind of regulation that the right finds to be an intrusion on their freedom. And, you know, the reason that I called it a Scientology strategy, and I also have to say that Peter Montgomery at People for the American Way's website, Right Wing Watch, caught the same thing I did. I caught it at the same time, having just watched Going Clear, the great documentary about Scientology. What they did to gain their religious status was to file lawsuits against the IRS, numerous lawsuits against the IRS, and individual government employees who worked for the IRS in order to harass them into just simply giving up. And it worked. And in fact, the whole documentary kind of tracks that scheme, and it's very, very frightening because I don't know that anybody's ever thought of doing this. Now, the irony of the right doing this, of course, is that they've built, you know, an entire edifice of antagonism against the courts. Remember tort reform? I mean, that used to get huge cheers at every Republican rally. You get trial lawyers, all this stuff. I mean, they were allegedly, opposed on principle to the idea of filing lawsuits for purposes, you know, for the purpose of advancing some kind of an agenda. Well, they seem to have changed their mind. And so the idea here is that Murray is saying we just need a couple of billionaires, and Lord knows, you know,
right,
there are enough of them out there who have so much money that they could easily finance some scheme like this, to sponsor a bunch of lawyers filing a flurry of lawsuits at the federal government. And if the Scientology, strategy works, what ends up happening is that the government becomes crippled, tired, defeated in this, and ends up rolling back regulations through the courts. So that's what this is about. And I agree with you. I think this is a strategy that goes way beyond anything we've ever seen before. And, it's fitting that this group of far-right extremists would adopt a strategy that was successfully used by a cult like Scientology.
And we've seen, it's not exactly the same strategy, but we've certainly seen this strategy employed in fighting Dodd-Frank, for instance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, where we see banks and industries essentially sue the SEC or various agencies, basically saying, or the Justice Department saying, like, you can't implement this part of – it's out of your jurisdiction, or it's not to implement this part of Dodd-Frank. It ties them up in the courts generally, like the first – I think it is circuit court in D.C. And it either – you have the regulatory agencies either just get overwhelmed in the legal case, or they decide, like, hey, we better not write these rules because we don't want to attract a 4-year, 5-year lawsuit that's going to tie us up and we're not going to be able to do anything. So we're going to start off by negotiating. This is slightly different insofar as it is really sort of, it seems to be, and this is what the Scientology strategy was, not even to win the case as much as to simply overwhelm the government's capacity to do anything.
Well, I mean, I think that's, you can see this happening already in some respects. I mean, for one thing, there's the other side of that, right, where they're starving these government agencies of operating funds. I mean, the reports about the IRS and various
right.
other agencies that are having a terrible time just doing normal business, right?
We see them do this with the post office. We see them do this with Amtrak, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you've got that side of it where, everybody, this is where the deficit, reduction scheme comes into play, where they just, they're starving the government of funds. So as Grover Norquist says, they can drown it in the bathtub. And then the other, then it's another prong coming at it from another direction and overwhelming these agencies with lawsuits. And as you say, a lot of this is just, it's a harassment strategy to just, infect the agencies with this kind of fear that this is going to happen. And I don't think that Murray says specifically in his book that they will file lawsuits against individual employees, but Scientology did that. They actually filed against, people. And if you see what they've done on the IRS scandal, which is really no scandal at all. I mean, this is completely trumped up, this IRS scandal. And they know it, but they haven't given up. They went after a person personally. I mean, this woman, Lois Lerner, she is being personally targeted by the right. And based upon, the work that she was doing at the time. And, I think her life's been miserable. And there was a little bit of foreshadowing of this during the Clinton administration back in the 90s, where they may not have filed lawsuits against specific employees in the administration and in the government, but they did end up costing these people vast sums of money in legal fees defending themselves against these trumped-up scandals. So, I mean, this is something that people are, you know, regardless of whether or not you're actually being personally targeted, just the fear that you might be
right.
is going to have an effect. And, you know, you can see this happening. It's like you say with God's Think. I mean, there's a lot. You can sense the sort of exhaustion that's going on in these regulatory agencies that are tasked with overseeing this. It's a massive job. And, you know, these banks and Wall Street firms have unlimited funds to spend on legal issues. And I think that's what maybe where Murray got his idea, which is that, well, we need somebody to do this in all of these different areas. This is working out well for us. And let's get a couple of billionaires to put some money behind it. And the thing is, on the right, that's entirely possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so terrifying. I mean, you think about the Koch brothers have just announced or, you know, announced a couple of months ago, they're going to drop $950 million or $900 million into this election cycle. Well, I mean, imagine approaching them and say, like, hey, you know, the yield on that is going to be for every dollar you spend, you're really only going to get 25%, 25 cents on the dollar back because you're going to get your guy elected. Well, I can give you something that will give you a 95% return on your investment, right? And not only that, I'm going to go across town and talk to some corporate interests who have no ideological stake in this, but they will also put money into this organization because they're going to get a payoff. And so the idea of going out and raising $1 billion and expending all of that on tying up the resources of the federal agencies seems it's one of those things that you hear like, why haven't they done this in the past? And I'm curious. I'm curious. Like, I think part of it is that, you know, there was still a vestige of like, that's unseemly. You know, like, there's not many quarters left, I think, in the conservative movement where that those words I just said have any resonance. And I think we're basically at the point where we're beyond that now or very close. But I suspect that's why we haven't seen it in the past.
I think so, too. I mean, I don't think before that, you know, and especially people with money, you know, I mean, these big money people, they didn't want their names attached to any of this stuff. You know, there was a sense that they wanted to be able to go to the, you know, the Met Gala or whatever and not have, you know, this political, you know, this extremist ideology sort of hanging around their neck. They just, you know, wanted to wear their diamonds. And now I think that's fallen away. I think they're taking sides. I think it's very clear. They're willing to come out there and be seen. And, you know, by the way, you know, the Koch brothers, you know, they do a lot of charitable work, good charitable work for hospitals and various institutions in New York, and, you know, they're not shunned for it, for their political ideology. So, you know, it's worked out fine for them. They've demonstrated that you don't lose any social status by doing that, and I think that they're fine with it. And so that whole thing has fallen away. And I also think it's, you know, this is an, you know, it is somewhat of an act of desperation. I mean, they are really at a point where their best hope is the courts, because it's going to be very difficult for them to, you know, to win the presidency, and the best they can hope for is a stalemate through a congressional majority or even one House of Congress majority in the House. And that is, you know, that's a problem for them, because the status quo is you know, that hurts them, especially as you see something like Obamacare coming along. If that is upheld by the court, and we don't have any idea if it will be, but if it is, I mean, that is just, that is something they are going to have to swallow, and it's not going to be pretty. I mean, that is a major defeat for this movement. And, you know, if that happens, if it doesn't, then we have a whole different, you know, ball game and on that count. But I think they're really very desperately looking for different ways, and they have taken on the attitude of by any means necessary. I don't think they care anymore how they get it done.
I want to ease into actually that question, because of another piece that you cited. That James Fallows cited Bruce Bartlett writing about the implications of Fox News. I want to get there in a second, because I'm not, you know, I'm not clear that this is desperation as much as it is as like, you know, well, this is just a new opportunity that has arisen for us. Like, right. you know, I mean, it is the case, I think, that they realize the executive branch is going to be out of their reach. But net, they're doing, I think, pretty well. If they can circumvent the sort of even the facade of democracy in this regard, right? I mean, because, again, this isn't about them going in and winning these court cases as much as it is basically just a war of attrition. Like, we will grind you down, and your agency's budgets will start to look like, you know, it's they're spending 90% on, rather than actually doing what they're supposed to do, but 90% on trying to make it legitimate what they do. I mean, that's the sort of the terrifying aspect about this, is that there is absolutely no way to deal with this, right? I mean, all it takes is one or two billionaires to say, this is what I'm going to do. And there doesn't seem to be any way to stop it.
Well, I can't. What would it be? I mean, what would be the mechanism to stop this? I mean, how could you possibly do anything about this? I mean, I guess, I mean, in a perfect world, you would, you could fund the government agencies with, you know, the massive legal staff that would just spend all their time doing that, by taxing the billionaires who are funding the lawsuits.
Right.
I mean, but to me, that seems like a simple solution. But of course, that's a pipe dream. I mean, that would never happen.
Right.
And all that this does is end up, you know, as it degrades government and degrades government services and their responsiveness to the citizens, it makes people more cynical and less likely to want to support government programs. So that works in their favor, as it always does. This is a very difficult problem. I mean, the left, it's interesting. In the piece that I wrote about this, I did recount the history going back into the 50s where the right attacked, you know, their original tort reform, anti-trial lawyer, anti-courts, you know, mantra started because the federal government came in and decided that they had to do something about Jim Crow, basically. And so the federal government, the courts, and specifically the Warren Court during the late 50s and 60s. And, of course, this was absolutely horrifying to the right wing at the time. And so that whole idea of the courts being undemocratic and, you know, usurping the power of the vote and all that stuff happened back then. But what the courts were doing then was actually, you know, they were stepping in on very explicit and specific constitutional issues of equality, individual rights and civil rights and equality under the law. I mean, there's no more of a constitutional set of issues than what they were deciding at the time. But this very much upset them, and they didn't, you know, that in those days they were spouting states' rights. That was the excuse that they used. This isn't going to be about that. I mean, this is not going to be about taking the courts and having them decide constitutional issues. This is something very different. It's more like an issue of people, you know, suing companies, perhaps, over their, you know, which is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. You sue a company, because it's, you know, environment, you know, one of the, you know, it's like the environmental activist, you know, like Silkwood or, mm-hmm. or Aaron Brockovich or something like that. We sue companies because they've polluted entire cities, that sort of thing. This is taking that idea and kind of turning it on its head, where instead of having individuals who are suing, you know, powerful institutions, and sometimes it could even be the government, on behalf of individual citizens. This is about billionaires funding using the same system to benefit themselves. And, this is a very crazy idea.
This seems more like to me, like basically like slap suits. These are like, you know, yes. suits that are designed specifically to like intimidate critics. Like basically, like just,
yes.
this is a war of attrition. Like this has nothing to do with the questions at law. This just simply has to do with we're going to tie up your resources. And yeah. by tying up your resources, we're going to prevent you from doing what it is that you want to do. I mean, this is why, in the context of tort law, why you have to have such massive law firms, and they have to have the ability to go out and basically secure a huge amount of capital to go after a large corporation, because that corporation says, like, you know, we spend X millions of dollars every year on in-house lawyers. We just need to give them something to do. And so if
exactly.
you're coming after us because we put a drug out on the market that's not safe, good luck to you. You're going to need $20-30 million to expend on this before you see a dollar from us. And that's why there's so much money involved in that type of situation. This, it just seems to me, it's just like we're just going to keep you busy and keep you from doing other things, like actually, I don't know, enforcing food safety regulations, enforcing environmental regulations, enforcing – I mean, we see it – you know, there's another example of this we see, at least an agency that's been overwhelmed, is the Federal Elections Commission. They basically 2 weeks ago just said, like, nothing we can do. Like, we're just overwhelmed. We don't have the actual apparatus to deal with this. And this just seems to me to be a strategy in which to sort of hasten that. And it's terrifying to me because I honestly don't see how anybody fights against it. But I want to turn to that piece that you cited, James Fallows citing Bruce Bartlett, whose premise is, well, why don't you describe what the premise is that Bartlett is pointing to?
Well, I mean, essentially, he says that what's happened over
And we
course,
should say, tell us who Bruce Bartlett is so that we
right,
understand.
Bruce Bartlett is, you know, he was well known, and I'm sure you remember his name, I certainly do, for many, many years as being a very mainstream Republican. He mostly wrote on domestic issues. He was, he worked for the Wall Street Journal. He worked in many different, Republican administrations. He was an advisor, very serious person, to coin a phrase, and one who was considered very much part of the conservative mainstream. And he is now an apostate. He has the Bush administration drove him over the edge, and he is now a critic. And he wrote, he went and analyzed some studies that have been done, and some of which I'm sure all of your listeners are familiar with, that, you know, Fox News audience is truly misinformed. They are the most misinformed people in the country.
Cybersecurity attack.
The studies, they are more misinformed by far than people who watch no news at all. Which tells you something, right? I mean, that explains that they are being literally misinformed, which any of us who watch, you know, who follow these stories know. I mean, these
right.
people are being consciously misinformed. But Barbara talks about something else, too, which is that its job really is to mobilize the right. I mean, that has been Roger Ailes' entire motive in trying to do a channel like this. I mean, they pretend that it was to balance out the extreme left-wing bias of the major news media, which comes as a surprise to any of us who are, on the left side of the dial. So it's really about mobilizing the right, and it has been very successful in doing that. But what it has done is created this outrage machine that now has the right wing at, you know, completely, you know, unpragmatic and unwilling and unable to participate genuinely in our democracy. And what it's done is it's moved the Republicans into a really, really difficult corner, because they need that, obviously. It's all about base motivation. I mean, what's happened is that in polarizing the electorate, it's become very polarized. The right wing in particular has to keep this outrage at a fever pitch in order to motivate their base. And that means that these Republican candidates, especially for the presidency, but I'd expect that senators have the same problem in states other than those that are just, you know, dominated by conservatives. Any state that has a fair, that needs anyone other than conservatives to win, any senator, is going to confront this problem. Where in order to motivate their base, they have to alienate everyone else. Because, and this is what, you know, what Bartlett says, he attributes this, and as do some political scientists he quotes in his piece, that, you know, this is, you know, because of the outrage machine that Fox News has created. And, you know, with James Fallows, he just, you know, sort of posted this last night and asked, you know, what's going to happen when the GOP decides that it needs to do something about this? I mean, what can it do? They've created this monster, and, right. And I don't know if there's any pulling it back in.
The thing that struck me about this, there's a couple of things. One, this is a dynamic that I know that you and I, among others, have been talking about literally for years. I mean, yes. Literally 4 years. I wrote a book about this in 2006 that was basically something like, this is, you know, the margins have taken over the party. We just haven't quite seen it yet. And we clearly have seen it now. And on this program, we referenced it many times. Frankenstein's now running through the Frankenstein's monster is running through the village. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. They control the party. But the interesting thing is, to me, that strikes me is, and we've talked about this, even the context of like that famous Michelle Bachmann sort of rebuttal to the State of the Union, where she's talking to the Tea Party on one camera and the rest of America sees her as crazy because she's looking off the side. Like that has always been the dynamic to me. You cannot talk to both those two entities at the same time. You're going to either talk to one or the other and you're going to look insane to one or the other. But here's the thing that sort of I find frustrating. One, the idea that Fallows sort of suggests that there is anymore a GOP that isn't that. In other words, it was one thing to say like the GOP establishment runs everything, and so the party reflects that. But they are now the margins on some level of the party, and they don't have control of this process, A. And B, it also sort of like hides the idea that this has been very successful for them. Like this is the part that I find very frustrating. Like the Republicans have a problem. Really? Do they? Okay, they won't win the presidency. But it seems to me that if you were to go back 25 or 30 or 35 years ago, 40 years ago now, as to what their project was supposed to be, they've been quite successful at it. Right? I mean, we have no infrastructure spending. We have no, our education system is under assault. I think we're about to see, you know, to the extent that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, we're going to start to see like sort of more private-public partnerships and the continued privatization of stuff. We have destroyed sort of the middle class's like sort of economic and political power. I mean, it seems to me they've been quite successful in just about everything that is was their project. And it's just so funny to me to see this. Like, it reminds me, there was a piece that I can't remember who the guy was. Maybe someone from The Atlantic. I feel like it was Joshua Green or something. Wrote 10 years ago, 11 years ago, that the left should be very worried about Air America because we see the damage that that Rush Limbaugh has done to the Republican Party. And boy, they're in big trouble. You know, this was 11 years ago or something. And they're in big trouble. Because of Rush Limbaugh. I mean, no, it's on the contrary. I mean, that's what's sort of fascinating to me about this.
Well, you know, there's another aspect of this too, and I think it's important to note. Even if they lose on, say, something like Obamacare, which is, you know, in their view, it's tantamount to putting people in the gulag. We know it isn't, right? I mean, this is a privatized health care system that isn't even universal. It's better than what it was, but certainly this is not a defeat for the right wing, okay? I mean, it just isn't. They've mandated that people buy something from private companies. What could be better than that, right? So, you know, that's not really a defeat. But, of course, you know, one of the things, and I don't think Bartlett mentions this in his piece, that drives the right wing is the idea that they are victimized and marginalized and they are on the run. I mean, this is, you know, Roger Ailes does this for a reason. That's motivating to them. So they look, you know, that meme, that narrative of the right being on the run, which is also, I mean, once again, you know, you've got people in the New York Times saying the same thing. The left is in disarray. They're all arguing with each other and blah, blah, blah. You know, the same old nonsense that you're talking about. They're saying that again right now. And all of that, you know, this idea that the right is, you know, in retreat, works for them. It's not that, you know, that isn't a bad thing on the right. That actually is a good thing. I mean, I've said for many years, I've written this many, many, many times, that, you know, they are the most effective minority party maybe in world history. They do as well, if not better, when they are in the minority than they do when they're in the majority. They are that, you know, they are very, very successful at pushing their agenda no matter where they are. And in fact, sometimes I suspect that they would prefer to be in the minority because I think they do better then. They can inflict all these terrible policies and programs on the American people and not take full responsibility for it. I mean, look at what they're dealing with Iraq. They had it all, right? I mean, they had the presidency and the Congress, and look what they did with it. I mean, they made a big mistake, and people know they made a big mistake. They'd much rather be able to write that stuff off as being either bipartisan or being something that the Democrats did while reaping the benefits of whatever that right-wing policy was. So, you know, this stuff works for them. They're very good at that. And, you know, when you say who in the GOP, you know, would be making this decision that they need to, quote, do something about it, I mean, I have to assume that would be the only people I can imagine who would say that would be politicians who are losing their seats, right?
Right.
But are they?
No.
That's the thing. You know, they're not really. I mean, they're in the minority.
You're going to lose some seats
in
the Senate. You're going to lose some seats in the Senate if you're Republicans. But you're not going to lose as many as statistically speaking you should, it seems to me.
No.
Right. And yes, you may not get the presidency, but you're going to be defeated by a, you know, someone who is arguably on the right end of the spectrum of the Democratic Party, right? I mean, we've all but abandoned labor. There's a lot of private partnership in there. There's someone who's like refusing to criticize directly Wall Street following what we've seen over the past, well, for 10, 15 years. It's always a little dicey to, you know, directly associate Hillary Clinton with Bill Clinton. But I mean, that's where, at the very least, she got her chops, right? And it was surrounded by people like Bob Rubin, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I always get very suspicious of these arguments, like these concerns, like the Republican Party is near, you know, destruction. Well, no, actually, like there's a lot of other things that are near destruction, institutions in this country. But, you know, and the interesting thing is, you know, we don't have too much time left, but we've got now, it's looking like there's going to be, I think, at least 15 or 16 candidates for the Republican nomination. And I've been saying for a while, like, this could be the cycle where one of the marginal figures wins. And it's harder to figure out, you know, as each year passes, who the marginal figure is supposed to be. Right?
I know. I was just going to say that. Yeah, who would that be?
Right. And, you know, like Mitt Romney went into the 2012 election as sort of like this Massachusetts moderate, and he never pivoted back to the center. And I think we're going to see a similar dynamic here it seems to me, I mean, I don't know, maybe Jeb Bush could pivot back in some way, but he's almost indistinguishable, right? I mean, there's some slight difference in terms of policy amongst these 16 people. But I think it's possible by the time we get to the first debate, there's going to be like 20. Because it's like turning into the Republican, to the recall vote in California.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. That is so true. With that, you know, with like Gary Coleman and I think Arianna Huffington was there.
There was like,
and of course, Schwarzenegger.
20 candidates in that election. Right. And the thing is that the more people jump in, the more of an incentive it is for more people, even more people to jump in. Right?
Yes.
Like I think if there was 8 candidates, I don't know that George Pataki would be like, I might as well. Because at this point, you know, the winner of like the person who could be considered a front runner could literally have 9% in the polls. Like, you know, like,
well, I don't you think that's what it's going to be early on? I mean, it just seems to me that's, and I don't even know how they winnow it down. I mean, you know, people like to you know, choose the mainstream candidates. I mean, I still think Jeb Bush is the Fred Thompson of this election cycle. I honestly do not believe that guy has, his heart is in it, and I don't think that he is, you know, ready for this. I get that sense over and over again whenever I see him, that he's just going through the motions. I think he's the last guy who'll be able to pack back to the middle, because the right is not going to trust him. I just don't think they do. And so that means that in order to, you know, be able to pack to the middle, they need to pick someone who's just absolutely without question, a true believer on the right, so they can let him have the room to tack, right?
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God. I mean, what are we talking about? Ted Cruz? I mean, people like to talk about Scott Walker, who I call him the great white bread hope. You know, they always are. He's the upper Midwest hero of this cycle that everybody assumes is going to be able to transcend all the differences in the Republican Party. And he puts his foot in his mouth every single day. And I swear, I think the guy has the charisma of, you know, a doorknob. I don't think he's got it. So I don't know who. Rubio seems like the one on paper, and he's another one.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is that we're going to get to the point, I think, by the summer where there will be, I think, close to like 14 candidates who will actually be polling less than Bernie Sanders will be on the Democratic side.
You know what? I think you're right. I mean, that will be very, very interesting. And what happens then? I mean, and they'll each have their own billionaire, right? I mean, there's enough. I mean, this isn't a matter of money, which is part of the problem here. You know, in the old days, you could winnow people down by whether or not they could raise enough money to have a legitimate campaign. Well, they all can now. I mean, there's no problem. They'll find some rich, you know, freak
I would even go beyond that, because it's not irrational. If you are, let's say, Pete Peterson, and you have been spending millions upon hundreds of millions of dollars for years to push forward this agenda of cutting Social Security, the idea that you need to just finance Chris Christie to the tune of $10-15 million to keep him in the race for the next year to be the guy who talks about cutting Social Security, that's a bargain. That's the best use of your money that you've found in years. And so every single billionaire who has one of these pet projects, who's like, I could go and try and buy a media campaign to push, you know, the fact that we should, you know, bomb the Palestinians to oblivion, or that we should destroy all unions, or that we should, you know, we should outlaw a contraceptive. Or I can just hire a spokesperson who is already considered a legitimate person because they're running for the Republican presidency. And if I got to spend $10-15 million to keep them as a spokesperson who are getting earned media every night of the week, depending on where they are locally for the next year, I'm going to do it. It makes total sense. I mean, that's
what's tip money. Hey, they could finance all of them. You know, one billionaire could decide to take all 14. give them each, you know, $10 million and say, hey, you know, this is my issue. I'd really appreciate it if you'd push this while you're on the campaign trail. And that would be nothing to them. I mean, $1 billion, I don't think people realize how much money that is. It's an outrageous sum, and it can be used for this purpose. And these guys can keep, you know, these, their issues. And by the way, it's not like the candidates are, you know, in any way embarrassed. I mean, look at these pilgrimages they're making to people like Sheldon Adelson. I mean, Marco Rubio calls him while he's on the road, you know, hi, Uncle Shelley, you know, how you doing? You know, just checking to see if you're okay. I mean, they are groveling before these billionaires to get the money. I mean, Ted Cruz went up to New York and met with a couple of gay billionaires who apparently didn't know who they were talking to, and started talking about how he really respects people and his tolerance and everything.
Right.
I mean, you know, they will do anything. They have no shame, and they will go and absolutely do whatever it takes. And these billionaires, many of whom are apparently not too bright, which, you know, doesn't exactly surprise me. They're just writing a check. So, I mean, this is going to be very interesting to see this on the right. I mean, you know, on the left, looks like Bernie Sanders, who's doing quite well, by the way, financially. He's raising a ton of money from individual donors. He's getting no money, of course, from the billionaires. But, you know, he'll raise a respectable sum and be able to put on a real campaign. And I don't know about Martin O'Malley or whomever else might join the
Jim Webb looks
party
like there. He's going to jump in apparently in the next couple of weeks. But let me just also finish this idea off about the Republican candidates, because, you know, you and I grew up at a time, and it has been sort of like unquestioned, I guess, principle that, you know, you hear about like, this candidate's sitting down with their family and weighing whether or not they want to spend this time. You know, I mean, remember, that's how it was like 10, 15, 20 years ago. At least on the right, it seems to me, at least in the Republican Party, perhaps maybe also in the Democrats, but definitely in the Republican Party. Like, that whole thing, like, this is a big decision, and why would you want to subject? That's out the window. I mean, first of all, if there's 15 candidates, the idea that you're going to get a lot of intense media scrutiny from unfriendlies goes down. B, even if you were to get that, you know, even if you're Herman Cain and the story comes out, people come out of the woodwork to say like, hey, this guy was really inappropriate with me and tried to molest me on business trips. Hey, Herman Cain, he apparently, I don't know if he was doing it for the money or just the idea of like, I'm going to be a household name. But he went on to have a radio show. I don't know how, if it's still around or if it, you know, how long it lasted. But however it lasted significantly longer than it should. The fact that I know this guy's name is really sort of almost absurd. And there was real value in it to him. Like, there's no cost associated with this at all anymore. There's no, on that side of the ledger, there's no, like, I don't want to put my family through this. Are you kidding? That's what every family wants now. You know what?
There's a huge upside. I mean, all there is
your
upside.
Kids are going to have a huge Twitter following, and everybody's happy now. You know, I mean, it's bizarre.
And you might even do as well as Sarah Palin and get your own reality show on TV, and your kids will be on Dancing with the Stars. You know, if you play your cards right, you can really parlay it into some money. I mean, and in fact, I mean, why else is Carly Fiorina doing this? I mean, what possible purpose can she have?
She may have the delusion that, A, she thinks she's going to be vice president. But I would also add that, like, it's just she just wants the fame, I think, it seems to me. Maybe she's going to try and run again for Senate in California. I mean, it's interesting to go down, and I don't think we have the time now, but to go down the list, like, you know, you say Jeb Bush is the Fred Thompson. The funny thing is that, like, I think, like, Lindsey Graham is also the Fred Thompson in this race. I think Lindsey Graham is just getting in to pave the way for Jeb, you know, to make sure that Jeb doesn't get devastated in South Carolina, and maybe he can be his, like, I don't know, his Secretary of Defense, or who knows whatever it is going to be. But it seems like there's a bunch of stalking horses. Like, just everybody's jumping in, no price to pay. I'm going to help my next book sales.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll all have, you know, plenty of life. And if worse comes to worse, every last one of them will, you know, if they play their cards right and follow the rules as they are set forth, They will all have a place on Fox News.
Absolutely.
Coming back to the Bartlett narrative there.
Digby, always a pleasure. We'll do it again soon. The blog,
absolutely,
of course, Digby's blog at blogspot.com. It's Hullabaloo. And at salon.com. We'll link to both. Thanks so much, Digby.
Thanks, Sam. Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Went a little long. What are you going to do? A reminder, it is your membership that makes this show possible. Become a member today at majority.fm. Don't forget, we've got this great deal with Credo. Credo Mobile, they have all the phones you would want ever. Just go to credomobile.com/majority report. Check out the phones they have. Check out the deal they have for Majority Report listeners. You got $100 off any new phone. You've got 25% off of data for your first year, up to $350 worth of credit. If you've got an early termination fee with your existing phone company, you could trade in your existing phone for up to $300 worth of credit. Just a tremendous deal, a great company, credomobile.com/majority report. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade tea, chocolate, or coffee. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Remember, they now have free shipping. Get the Majority Report blend. And also our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link. Folks, you can find anytime you want our coupon codes at our support our sponsors page at majority.fm. We'll be back in a moment. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. Or you can IM me on the app at majorityapp.com. It's free. Also, give us a review on iTunes. We get on these jags, like where we get very excited about certain things. Right now, our iTunes reviews are those things.
Like little kids.
Oh, yes, it's true.
What was the O for?
What's
up?
Well, maybe we can do this tomorrow. But I wanted to thank Andrew, listener Andrew, sent us a box of goodies. Like, I don't know if I want to encourage people sending us produce, but sent us a box of avocados.
They look really good.
And it was funny to watch Matt's expression when he saw a vegetable for the first time, or fruit.
It's the first time I've ever seen one.
Yeah, he's like, is it a big avocado?
You went to Peru, you saw your first vegetable.
Well, I was like, wait a second, there's no cellophane around it. How do I eat this?
Right.
All right, we got to take a break. 646-257-3920 is number.
Where's the chocolate in the middle?
Be right back.